Welcome to you all. Great to see you. And I'll be speaking in the English today, so I hope that makes it a little bit easier for you. And just to be clear, yeah, that was exactly the same reading again and again in different languages, because God's the God of all people. He's not just a white Western Christian God. And His word is actually, the same message no matter where we come from in the world. Now, we've started a series in Romans, the book of Romans, which is a book that's perhaps had a bigger impact on the Western history than on world history than more than any other book of the Bible. And we've been looking at some big questions. Last week, we looked at the introduction, which talked about, well, what is Christianity in a sentence? Today, we've got a big hard one called, how can we know God exists? We've got about, 8 or 9 more to go before we run into Christmas, but I hope this one's helpful for you, and perhaps one you've thought about or are thinking about yourself now. So keep your, if you have questions along the way, sort of write them down or make a mental note, and then we'll have a song after the sermon, and then we'll have some extra time and you can ask them out loud, and I'll try my best to give you a reasonable answer. But at the last census, Australian census, 39% of Australians identified as no religion, and it had been growing as well. Now, I don't know, people could mean all sorts of things by no religion. They could mean Jedi, no doubt many of the people who identify as no religion, self-identify as agnostic or atheist. That is, they don't believe there's a God. Now, Christians, we believe that we have the greatest message in the world, that we have a message about the greatest person in the world. And so, and this message is for everyone, and so we're very keen to share it. In fact, a few weeks back in the Investigating Christianity course, we got to the end of the final study, and someone said, this message is too good to be true. And I was excited. A big smile came to my face, and I said, that's great, because that means you've got it. And so it's a message we want to share to everyone. But at the same time, well, how can anyone believe in Christianity if they don't even know if God even exists? Now, over my time, I've heard sort of Christians and those who aren't Christians have all sorts of conversations around this question about the existence of God. And in fact, I remember even myself as a uni student engaging in conversations with friends who weren't Christians. And I remember in first year, one particular friend was an atheist, and I'd chat to him for hours about this. He didn't believe in God at all, but he just loved to have deep and meaningful conversations about God and about God's existence. And so, to the best of my ability and in as gentle and respectful a manner as I possibly could, I used to try and put my ideas forward about why I thought God exists. But as much merit as they had, my friend was always able to find a way to rationally avoid each argument. For him, he couldn't believe unless there was at least one absolutely airtight proof for God's existence. And so he couldn't believe. Now, through Facebook, actually, a year or two ago, I found out that, this is now 20-odd years later, that guy's actually become a Christian, and he goes to a church here in Hobart, which, was both delightful for me, but also just very surprising. I'm like, wow, compared to the guy I knew and what his beliefs were, well, I wondered to myself, how did this happen? Now, I've never actually talked to him since then, but I just saw it on Facebook, but so I'm not sure why, in his case, why he did come to believe in God and become a Christian. But one thing is for sure. If anyone is looking for an airtight proof, then they'll never come to believe in God. At the end of the day, there is no irrefutable proof for the existence of God. But on the other hand, there's also no irrefutable proof that God doesn't exist. Okay? And so perhaps a better way for us to approach it and to think about a better approach to the lines of reasoning isn't to think so much about proofs, bulletproof proofs, but to think about the evidence as clues. How can we know there's a God? Are there any clues for God's reality? Has God left any divine fingerprints, so to speak? See, how can we know God exists? It's a very common question and an important one too. Well, the Apostle Paul, who he wrote about half of the New Testament books in the Bible, he actually addresses this question on one occasion. In his letter to the Romans, this ancient church in Rome, he anticipates a hypothetical objection by someone about God's existence. The context is light of verse 18. Oh, sorry, I didn't write verse 18 in my script. What does verse 18 say? Yep, nice loud voice.
The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness.
Okay, so it's saying, verse 18 is saying, well, God's angry. God's angry with all of humanity because they've rejected the truth about him. And so Paul answers the hypothetical objection, well, how can God be angry with anyone if they didn't even know he existed? And so look at his reply in verse 19 and 20. He points us in a helpful direction in answer to our question today. Let's read, look at verse 19 and 20. It'll be up on the screen, but I also like you to have your Bibles open because I want you to see that what I don't want to put my ideas into the Bible. I want to get them out of the Bible. And so I want you to be testing me against Scripture all the time, every sermon and talk you ever hear me do. But look at verse 19, sentence 19. It says, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. Verse 20, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. In other words, what he's saying is that God's made the basic truths about himself known to everyone. God's made the basic truths about himself known to everyone. Well, how, you may ask? Well, Paul's reply is, well, from the created world. The exact phrase in Romans there is, we can know God's eternal power and divine nature. God is eternal, God's powerful, and that God is God, he's divine. In other words, God's left fingerprints all over the place if we have eyes to see them. Now, don't misunderstand me. Paul's not saying that you can know everything about God from looking at the world. But as we just stop and ponder and look at this world, what we can know is that the being who made this world must be of unimaginable greatness. Now, over the years, philosophers have grouped all the divine clues, so to speak, these divine fingerprints, into four main groups. And each of these four has a big technical name, and I'll use that big technical name, but don't be scared by that. The idea behind them is actually just, you know, simple enough. Now, in my personal experience, different people are persuaded by different clues. So you can tell me, well, which fingerprints perhaps you find more persuasive. Let's have a look. The first one then, the first clue then, is the cosmological fingerprint. And so what I'm talking about here is the Big Bang. Now, this clue goes back to the most basic question. Well, where did the cosmos come from? Why is there something and not nothing? And given that this cosmos does exist, well, where did the original something come from? And if it was the Big Bang, then what caused the Big Bang? You see, something had to make the Big Bang happen, didn't it? Because zero plus zero can't equal everything. Zero plus zero doesn't equal the cosmos. That takes a big leap of faith to believe that. You see, something had to make the Big Bang happen. But what? What could it have been? Well, perhaps something outside of nature. Perhaps a supernatural being that exists all by itself, like God. Now, I guess each one of us has to ask ourselves, well, is it easier to believe that nothing made everything or a creator God made everything? Both positions take faith. Sam Harris, a well-known proponent of atheism, he once argued in an interview, he said, quote, "Well, even if we hypothetically accepted that the universe simply had to be created by an intelligent being, this wouldn't suggest that being is the God of the Bible." Now, I actually agree with him. This cosmological clue about where did everything come from, where did the Big Bang come from, it doesn't get us all the way to proving that the existence of a personal God or the God of the Bible. Romans verses 19 and 20 don't argue that creation reveals everything about God, but only some basic truths. That the creation reveals that there's a God, that he must have been eternal because he was there before the Big Bang, and that he's powerful. If we're looking for a mere divine fingerprint, a clue that there's something perhaps beyond this physical world, well, some people don't find this convincing, but for others, this clue is quite provocative. That's the first clue, the cosmological fingerprint. The second clue, then, is what's called the teleological fingerprint. Now, some of you might have heard this before. You might have heard by the name the fine-tuning argument. Now, the word telos just means purpose. And so if you look around at the world, it's as if this world was made for a purpose. It's as if it was made for the purpose of us being able to exist and live on this planet. You see, it seems as if, the more and more we know about science, it seems as if everything is just so perfectly calibrated for human life, all the constants of physics, for example, it's as if everything has just been designed just for us. Francis Collins, who was the head of the Human Genome Project, he put it like this. In the middle of the Human Genome Project, he actually became a Christian, but because he could see the incredible fine-tuning. But he said this, when you look from the perspective of a scientist, the universe, it's as if the universe knew we were coming, he goes on. There are 15 constants, for example, the force of gravity, nuclear constants, the speed of light, and so on and so forth, that have precise values. And if any one of those was off by even one part in a million, or in some cases, by one part in a million million, then the universe couldn't exist. Matter wouldn't coalesce, and so there would be no galaxies, there would be no stars, there would be no planets or people. The universe is incredibly fine-tuned, so incredibly fine-tuned that it's surely got to be more than a coincidence. Our cosmos looks like it was designed just for us. It's as if there was a divine welcome mat. Let me give you some examples. If the oxygen levels in the atmosphere were just 4% higher, then this planet would have erupted like a giant fireball. If the Earth, it's a long way away from the sun, if it was just 2% closer, it'd be too hot for us to exist. Or if Jupiter, I think it's a big one, isn't it? Have we got any astronomers? It's a big one. It's the big one. If it wasn't as large as it was, then there'd be about, so say it was slightly smaller, there'd be 10,000 times more asteroids hitting the Earth compared to now. Now, I could go on and give you another 100 examples, but if any one of these things was just slightly different, then life on Earth wouldn't be possible. Now, I guess, again, we each have to ask ourselves, well, is it easier to believe that we're just lucky by chance that we're in a one in a trillion trillion solar system where everything came together just right? Or is it easier to believe that there was a divine intelligent designer who behind this perfect machine we see? Which is more likely? Well, again, the Apostle Paul points us to the divine fingerprints. He says, through the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. It's a clue, he says. Again, some find this persuasive. How about you? That's the second divine fingerprint, the fine-tuning argument. Let's move on to the third clue. The third clue is called the moral fingerprint. And so this one concerns that universal sense that we have, even in the farthest long-lost tribes of, you know, the Amazon or wherever. It concerns the universal sense amongst humans of right and wrong. Every human being has been born with an inner voice, a conscience that talks to us and tells us how we ought to live. And when we go against that voice, that conscience, and we do what we know is wrong, well, we tend to feel guilty. And even in parts where they've never heard about the Bible or the Christian God, human beings still have that sense of morality. Now, have you ever asked yourself, well, why is this? Think about it for a moment. Does a moral compass inside human beings make sense in a world or in a universe that's nothing more than an accident? Why should right and wrong even exist if everything's just exists by random chance without any meaning or purpose? If all we are as humans is a random collection of atoms and chemicals and neurological processes, then does right and wrong even make sense? After all, a conscience isn't found in any other animal kingdom, in anything, anywhere else in the animal kingdom, is it? I bought six chickens. Now I've only got five. 2 weeks ago, a hawk mauled one of my chickens, swooped down and whew, mauled its head, poked its eyes out and mangled its feathers, left him for dead. It didn't even eat it. Wasn't even hungry. Just killed it. Now, do you think that hawk is now flying around feeling guilty for having committed murder? You see, if we're equal to the animals and nothing more, just a bit more advanced, if it doesn't feel guilty, well, why should I? Why should you or I? Why should anyone? Is morality just a figment of our imagination? Some philosophers say, yeah, it is. But no one lives like that in practice. I mean, look at your own generation. There's a really strong sense of social justice these days, isn't there? People believe strongly, passionately about right and wrong. Well, the Bible says, as we'll see again in our next chapter of Romans, our moral sense actually comes from God, who stamped us in his image. And so his laws are actually written on human hearts, whether we believe in him or not. God seared the basic shape of his law, what's right and wrong, into our consciences. And so you're going to ask yourself, well, what reflects reality better? A moral world that's created by a moral good God, or morality, which is an illusion, because we exist in a random, accidental, purposeless world without God? I had another friend at med school. I used to, in second year or third year of med school, we used to drive up to Launceston together to go and work and study in the Launceston General Hospital. He was an atheist. He's never changed his mind as far as I'm concerned. But this was the clue. This moral fingerprint was the clue that really kind of he found most persuasive. This divine fingerprint, the moral fingerprint. So again, how about you? Now that brings us to our fourth clue. The fourth and final one we have for tonight. This one's called the desire fingerprint. You see, people yearn for more than just basics like food and water and shelter to pass on our genetic DNA. It's more, we sense, there's more to life than that. We desire more than that. We desire love. We desire beauty. We desire for lasting significance. We long for life that one day won't cease to exist. We long for things beyond this world. Steve Jobs, the co-founder of Apple, was one day sitting down with his biographer. And apparently the biographer tells the story in his biography that in the season before Steve Jobs died, that Jobs started to talk openly about God. And he said this, Steve Jobs said this, quote, "Sometimes I believe in God. Sometimes I don't. I think it's 50-50 maybe. But ever since I had cancer, I've been thinking about it more and more and believing it a bit more. Maybe it's because I want to believe in an afterlife, that when you die, it just doesn't all just disappear. The wisdom you've accumulated, that somehow it lives on." So how do we make sense of these desires? Are they rational? One voice in the philosophical world is A.N. Wilson. He's a British journalist, writer, and thinker. He said this. This is his words, not mine. "Atheism has no answer whatsoever to the question of how we humans could be capable of love or heroism or poetry." But there is a reason that Steve Jobs felt like that. And there's a reason that we all feel like that. You see, another atheist who converted to Christianity was the Oxford professor C.S. Lewis. And he summed it up this way. He said, quote, "Creatures aren't born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exists. For example, a baby feels hunger. Well, there's such thing as food. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there's such thing as water." He goes on, "Men and women feel sexual desire. Well, there's such thing as romance and sex." He continues, If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, then the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. If none of my earthly pleasures satisfy it, that doesn't prove this universe is a fraud. Probably earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy it, but only arouse it to suggest the real thing." Unquote. You see, C.S. Lewis, in other words, is saying our desires, our longings, our feelings aren't absurd, but are meant to point us to a fulfillment outside this world. They're meant to point us to the existence of God, who created us for those things. We were created ultimately for a relationship with Him. And that's where our hearts, our desires, our longings, our yearnings will find their ultimate fulfillment. You see, if God is love and has made us to know and enjoy Him forever, then our desires for love and beauty and significance and immortal life, well, they make sense. That's the fourth clue, the desire fingerprint. And so we've been asking ourselves a common and important question. How can we know God exists? Are there clues for God's reality? And what we've seen is the evidence of four clues pointing to the existence of God: the cosmological fingerprints, the teleological fingerprints, the moral fingerprints, and the desire fingerprint. Now, what this means is, if you're a Christian then, is that there's actually a very reasonable and rational reason to believe in the existence of God. Sure, there's no clue that's watertight, but I haven't just presented one possible clue. But when you take all these clues, and sure, each one individually, you can come up with some rational reason why they don't work, but when you put all these accumulative clues together, they have a lot of force. There's a lot of accumulative weight. And in fact, I've just given you four clues, but there's about another 30. If you want to read some Christian philosopher like Alvin Plantinga, you can if you'd like to learn more. And so we can have great confidence about the reasonableness and the rationality of believing in God. If we believe in God, then the Big Bang, for example, if it's correct, isn't mysterious, nor the fine-tuning of the universe. If God exists, then our intuitions about morality and meaningfulness and love and beauty and immortality are to be expected. That would make sense in our world. And so the belief that God made the world actually accounts for the evidence we see better than the theory that there is no God. Now, if you're not someone who believes in God, then let me ask you to consider one thing this week. Consider how you live your life each day. Do you live your life each day in a way that's more consistent with the truth that God exists or God doesn't exist? Let me explain. You see, if you don't believe in God, then not only are things like the origin of the Big Bang or the fine-tuning of the universe or our sense of right and wrong or our longings for meaning, love, and eternal life profoundly inexplicable, but the view that there is no God wouldn't even lead you to expect those things. Yet ask yourself, Even though you have little reason to expect those things, you go on using them. You see, there's no basis for expecting that the laws of nature will go on regularly, day by day. If this world is nothing more than a explosion of a can of paint. Yet, even though you can't expect the laws of nature to go on regularly, do you continue to use your inductive reasoning every day as if things will be regular? And if there's not solid ground to trust your senses, that, you know, if love and meaning and beauty, if they're nothing more than an illusion produced by the collision of atoms in our brain, chemicals in our brain, yet do you continue to live life each day like your family and friends do actually love you, and that your study and work do give you meaning, and you do enjoy the beauty of music as you listen to Spotify? If that's my challenge for you this week, consider, do I live my life more consistently with the fact that, well, God does exist or God doesn't exist? It's an important question, this question, does God exist? Because the Apostle Paul says in the Bible here, in these verses that we looked at, that there's more than enough evidence. Look again at the last four words of verse 20. I'll read the whole of verse 20 again. Notice that particularly the last four words. Verse 20 says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people," here we go, "so that people are without excuse from God's perspective." Well, you might then respond, well, why are there so many people in the world who don't believe in God? My response is, come back next week. This series is to be continued. That's next week's topic.